Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is one of the most popular shows on NPR and certainly on WAMC. It will be taping live this Thursday, September 1st at 8 o'clock at the Koussevitzky Music Shed at Tanglewood in Lenox. The show's guest will be Boston Red Sox Hall of Famer Bill Spaceman Lee. The show is hosted by Peter Sagal, who will be joined by judge and scorekeeper Bill Curtis, who joins us on the roundtable this morning for a preview. Bill Curtis, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. We're looking forward to it.
What is it like for you? You do have a home base, but the show travels a lot. What do you enjoy about that, and what does the show, do you think, gain from going from place to place?
We travel every month. And it's almost every state. It's very popular, so we sell out, 6 weeks in advance. So we're playing to, the 8,000 people at Tanglewood and 5,000 in New Orleans, et cetera, et cetera. And what that does, it gives us an energy. We're able to roll out, I wouldn't say experimental humor, but to see what is playing out there. And you can almost take the pulse of America, where Trump stands and Hillary stands, and run your own surveys on just how much of a reaction you're getting. But anyway, it's invigorating, energizing, I would say, to take the show on the road. We love it.
You were the scorekeeper, the announcer, took over for Carl Castle. What was it like to move into that role after Carl had done it for so long?
Well, it's an honor, simply because Carl was so beloved and still is. He was one of the founders, came up with Peter. They have a very close relationship. And people will now come up to me and say, oh, I didn't think anybody could replace Carl Castle, but you're coming close, you're coming close. We enjoy you, too. So it was big shoes to fill.
Why did you think about it? What was it about the job that you thought would be enjoyable for you?
You know, for 30 years, I've been a journalist, an anchorman, a CBS News correspondent, covered the world, and then for 20 years after that, have produced documentaries, investigative reports, and cold case files, for PBS and A&E. So I was hauling the rock up the hill for quite a while. I enjoyed it, but it felt like a cage that you have to fill a role, and that role is very serious. When you're on the air, you're not smiling a lot. You're certainly not laughing at jokes or even making any. So I felt released. I'm out of my cage. I could really enjoy this now and sit there and enjoy it with everybody else and play my role, which is, the subordinate to Peter, and watch it all and become part of the family. So that's, what I expected, and I think what I've achieved. It's great.
I've talked to many, Peter included, but many of the participants of the program, panelists, as well as Carl and yourself. And one of the things that I'm always interested in is what it is that you think allows the show to work so well. What do you think the backbone of the show is?
The timeliness, so that it's fresh every week. And people, they follow the news. It's an NPR audience. And so they know what's happening out there. And the show, because of the research into the internet and all the stories, is kind of a super editor with a humorous touch. And they're able to kind of know the generics of a joke and see how our writers put the spin on it. And then they'll come along with, some crazy story that they haven't read or haven't discovered. That's the key. I mean, ultimately, any show like this, or whether it's comedians or just humor, it's the content that ultimately will make it survive. Then you have this wonderful play between professional humorists. The panel is very sharp and quick. Peter's great, and he writes most of the show. So, you're really listening to guys at the top of their game. And I, it's always been a wonderful show, but for me, it's really kind of come into its own in a bigger, bigger way. But my goodness, they have 4 or 5 million people every week.
Right.
They have 7 million on podcasts every month. I think it's the most popular show, certainly on the weekends, that NPR has. And they like it. So do I.
As I mentioned, you're on the road. You're coming to Tanglewood. Home base, though, is Chicago, and that was your home base for a long time. Did a lot of reporting in Chicago.
Yes, 30 years. I was an anchor here, and then about 6 years off with CBS in L.A. and New York, morning news. So I called it home. I'm from Kansas originally and kind of came up the Mississippi Valley. Chicago is the big city for the Midwest. And it's a good market, nice people, and I kept coming back here.
Your voice is so recognizable, of course, through the work on CBS, but also Anchorman, the movie. I'm sure that was the reason, A, that they wanted you because of that, a very authoritative voice, but one also that was somewhat recognizable.
If you want an authoritative voice, that's the category I fall into. And it has, you know, it has its own, it may not be in and of itself funny, but it's a great setup to the following, to the punchline. For instance, there was a time before cable when only men read the news. And in San Diego, that man was Ron Burgundy. He had a voice that could make a Wolverine purr. He wore suits better than Sinatra. And there it is. I usually stop there. I caught Will giving a radio interview, and he used that line. That's my line to open the show. Adam McKay says, look, Anchorman, any talk about Anchorman doesn't begin until Bill Curtis reads the opening line. So I was not the model anchor man that he had in mind, but I was kind of his muse because I was anchoring when he was at Second City. He, Steve Carell, married a waitress in Chicago during that period. Everybody, you know, goes through Second City. And so I was the guy he has in mind. And I saw an interview by Clint Eastwood the other day. It said, you know, by the time I get rid of him or get finish with the movie and send it in, I don't think anybody will watch it. You know, we've seen it so many times. We've gone over each line. Well, that was sort of a way about writing the Anchorman script. So he sent it to me. He said, mm-hmm. We didn't think you'd take it. You know, you're a reporter. And, I start reading it. I start laughing. And then send in an audition script. And I'm laughing so hard in between lines that they, at the other end, are sitting there listening to it, and it's the first they hear of reaction to the lines. And they just love it because it might be funny. And from there, then I decided, and took a big risk, a big jump. You know, I called Harold Ramis and said, hey, you know, what about these guys? Is this, you know, am I going to end my career here and to be laughed out? And he said, well, they're good people. Nobody knows when a movie's going to be a hit. But, you know, might as well take a chance.
You talk about risk, but I would dare say 20 years ago, somebody with your background and your position wouldn't dream of taking that. And now you see many anchors who will do cameos in films and do different things. We've loosened up a little, right? We've gotten a little bit to the point where we can, anchormen such as yourself, can find humor in what it is they do.
Yes. You know, I would... Cronkite was, of course, the father figure, and for him it was Murrow beyond that. And I would always look to Cronkite when I was asked to do something. And I'd say, well, did Walter do that? Well, when he retired, he did do a science PBS type show called Universe. Well, I could do that. And he did do some voiceovers, for individual corporation. Okay, I can do that. And he was out there, kind of probing the limits. He was still very straight, very serious. But, in a sense, his doing it said, don't take yourself so seriously. Have some fun, for one thing. And you're not giving up your integrity simply because you're going to be doing a lighter story. So, especially when I get off into the documentaries, crime and a PBS documentary, one of the most fun parts of my career was a series of 100 shows called The New Explorers, which was a science adventure series. And, suddenly I kind of lifted the science story from the feature page to the front page and was doing the climate change stuff when Al Gore was just really getting into it. I said, hey, this is a big story. This could be bigger than all the wars we've ever had because it's going to change, the way we live. And we went to every country in South America to do the hour documentaries. And so I satisfied my yearning to travel as much as Wait does.
And it's certainly, as you said, there's a penchant for fun, but there's one thing that and I assume is true, that comes out just crystal clear when listening to you on that program, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is that you seem to just be having a lot of fun.
An awful lot of fun. As a matter of fact, I'll kind of get carried away, and so sometimes I want to initiate or say something that I think is funny. And we're rolling along, especially in front of a live audience. All of a sudden, the crowd gets quiet. And I said, I'm leading up to a joke, You don't have to act like I'm going to say something serious. But both the good and the bad of having that authoritative voice. I was on a board, and we were at Denali National Park in Alaska. And I had listened, for a couple hours in the discussion. It was getting to be around noon. And I said, well, I'd like to, just interject here. What I think we should do, and suddenly the crowd, including Donald Rumsfeld, before he was Secretary of Defense, and you guys from Wall Street, quiet. What I think we should do is get on a bus, go down to the bottom of the hill, get some sandwiches, eat lunch, and then come back and continue the discussion. They looked at me like, what? What in the world are you saying? And the moderator explained. He said, well, Bill, when you say something, it's so authoritative, we think it's got to be of substance.
Right.
I said, wrong.
Well, because when you hear that voice, it's either God or head for the fire exits, or you're having fun on the show.
It's like we interrupt this program for a bulletin.
It's a little scary.
Sure. Breaking news.
Bill Curtis and the rest of the Wait, Don't Tell Me family. Do you know who the panelists are going to be in?
I don't.
Okay.
My guess is Paula will be in there. She's our star. And I don't know the rest.
All right. So it's Wait, Don't Tell Me, and the whole crew will be there on Thursday night at Tanglewood in Lenox, Massachusetts, in the Shed. And you've been going there for several years now, and it's always great to have you in town. Bill Curtis is the announcer and scorekeeper, and it's a great pleasure to have him on the roundtable this morning. Bill, safe travels, and we look forward to seeing you in Lenox.
Well, thank you, Joe. I'm looking forward to it.
Great pleasure.
We'll see you then.
Thanks very much. Bill Curtis and the Wait, Don't Tell Me crew coming to Tanglewood on Thursday night for a taping of Wait, Don't Tell Me, which will air here on Saturday morning. You can find out more information by going to tanglewood.org, tanglewood.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.